Welcome, everyone. It is wonderful to be together again. I'm Ulla Norris, and I am this year's Forum Club president. Today's featured speaker is Tom Donahue, the very dynamic president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the powerful lobbying organization that promotes the interests of U.S. business and industry. And what a timely appearance this is. Mr. Donahue is on a tight schedule, and we appreciate enormously the fact that he honored his commitment to come and speak to us today. We look forward to hearing what he has to say. Dave Rizmiller, our vice president, will introduce him shortly. Aren't you vice president? You're president-elect. Oh, well. We have a very large organization, you know, with many, many titles. In addition, and as an extra bonus, we also will be hearing from James Gorman, the new CEO of Morgan Stanley. So today's format is going to be quite different. Enjoy your lunch, which already has been served, while you listen to our speakers and meet our students. But first, I would like to ask the Reverend Ted Sauter from the North Naples Methodist Church to lead us in the invocation.
Thank you. It's my privilege. I specifically asked to pray at this one because our church is an executive member of the chamber. I don't know what it means, but it sounds good. And I heard you were good at fundraising, which I could learn a lot from. And then what retirement I have left is with Morgan and Stanley. So I'll pray a really good short prayer. Our God, we are blessed to live in this country, which we have so many freedoms, and we have different opinions, and we can express them strongly, but you've blessed this country. And this community is especially wonderful. We thank you for businessmen and women who make a difference in giving leadership to their community, to their churches, to people in general. Thank you for the students that are here, the food that we have. Bless us as we share together and learn. In your name we pray. Amen.
Thank you, Reverend Sauter. Hello. What we are going to do, because of Tom Donahue's tight schedule, I'm going to introduce him now, and he will speak, and we will have the usual Q&A following his presentation. And I remind you that there are cards on the table where you can write a question, and we will try to cover a few of those questions. I do have one offer already. Tom Donahue has offered to run my campaign for President of Forum Club. So given the success that he's had the last few weeks, I think that'd be a pretty good campaign manager. Forum Club members and guests, it's real a pleasure to introduce Tom and bring him to us as our initial speaker for this season. You members, received an extensive bio of his in our November newsletter, and I will not even begin to try and read that because of all the things that he has accomplished. Yes, he did go to college, he told me, bachelor's degree, MBA, but he has 3 honorary doctorate degrees as well, as people around the country have recognized his many contributions to our country. You know, he was with the U.S. Chamber, I think, in the 70s, and I think what they did is put him out for training, because he then went to the American Trucking Association in 1984, and was there for 13 years and did an outstanding job. He was then hired again by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, where he comes to us after 13 years. So it's a rule of 13 there. He was Trucking Association for 13, and here it is 13 more years. You may have seen that this is one of the most powerful lobbying organizations in our United States. We've probably seen his name in the paper as much as he would like to see it, and maybe more in the last few weeks. But certainly the U.S. Chamber made a real contribution to this most recent election. I think their budget is well over $200 million. I think they have well over 300,000 members, and it's a real tribute to Tom that they retain memberships, even though many times their members are on different sides of an issue. So that's a real compliment to that organization. So he has to be a pretty good negotiator. Kind of reminds me of a college president with things you have to come to grips with, different feelings. Our speaker does travel an awful lot, probably at least two-thirds, 70% of the year. And so we are very fortunate to have his commitment to be here today to speak to us at our forum club. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Tom Donovan to the podium.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We will. I appreciate your accommodating me and allowing me to speak while you eat. So we will operate under our mother's rules. That is, you keep eating, eat quietly, and I will speak as forcefully as I can so that we can at least get to the issues at hand. Everybody's talking about the elections. I'll get to that in a minute, but first, David, thank you. It's good to see some of my friends and important members here. I appreciate that, and I appreciate the opportunity to kick off your new speaking season. I hope you will do better with each session than you will do today, but I'll do the best I can, and thanks to Ellie and others for putting this together. Everybody wants to know, and what they asked me to talk about is how do we restore America's economic greatness. I was interested, we took some pictures over there just a few minutes ago with a lot of the students that are here, and by the way, there's our economic greatness. It would be a good idea, and I'll say this in a minute, if we could get more people to get a good education and reduce significantly the 30% of our high school students that don't graduate from high school, that's a real problem. Now, I'd like to say a word first about what happened on Tuesday, and I think it's clear that the American people delivered a very, very simple message to the Congress and to their fellow citizens, and I think probably to the administration. Their message was focus on the economy, focus on jobs, and you keep the rest of that stuff. You know, for the past 2 years, we've had a Congress, very, very vigorous Congress, and an administration focused on just about everything but jobs. I give both the Bush and the Obama administration great credit for averting a second Great Depression at the end of 2008 and into 2009. And along with the Congress and the Fed, God bless the Fed, they took unprecedented steps to prevent a total collapse of our economic system. Now, not all the steps were popular, but it's hard to argue with the results of saving us from falling into that hole. Our banking system is today intact. Some of our key industries were saved from certain disaster, and taxpayers are getting their money back. In fact, they will get lots more than their money back. All the major banks have paid back with usurious interest rates. Isn't that true? Right. And following that, you're going to see General Motors and AIG, and you know, there were great pronouncements of how much money they're going to lose. It looks like we're going to get most of that money back. But after these difficult steps, the administration and the Congress, in my opinion now, took their eye off the ball. They became more focused on ramming through a decade-old wish list of liberal policies that were on, you know, that were challenging us as we were trying to solidify our economy and get our recovering going. And there was an entire year of not doing the business of the Congress in the normal way, because at first there were 60 Democratic votes in the Senate and a huge plurality in the House, so they didn't pay any attention to normal business. They were doing it in the Speaker's office and in the White House, and people were not getting a chance to put their ideas on the table. And as a result, we got some issues and some programs that many of us wish were a little bit different. I'll get to that. I'm just getting warmed up. Now, the financial reform bill was the one that I think is most interesting, because And it should be interesting for each of you. You'll also be interested in healthcare because those two factors are, you know, if you come to Florida, if you live in Florida, you have to have your, you know, your litany of medicines and aches and pains and everything. Otherwise, you don't get invited to the necessary parties. But if you come to this part of Florida, you know, people are very interested in economics and money. And so I'm very glad to be here. So let me start with the re-regulation of the capital markets. You know, when we did Sarbanes-Oxley, those of you that were involved in that, they passed the bill, there's some good, some bad, and they had 16 regulatory filings they had to make to get it done, and it took 2.5 years. That's simple mathematics. For this new regulation of the capital markets, we will have mandated 320 regulations, vigorously suggested another 220, and required 170 studies and reports. Now, I just had a new grandchild last night, and I suspect that she will be retiring when they finally get all of those rules done, which gives you a great deal of uncertainty and adds to the difficulty in creating jobs. And then, along the way, there were major tax increases and huge deficit spending in both capital markets and very, very important, in healthcare. There were numerous attempts while this was going on by the unions, and they had a wish list. The first one was repealing the secret ballot. The second one was a huge arbitration set of agreements that wouldn't work very much. And then, most of all, they moved in to the Labor Department, where they're now trying to rewrite 90 rules on compensation, safety, employment, and all of that. So you wonder why companies and CEOs and others are sitting on their cash, because they don't know what all of that is going to cost, nor do they know what all of the tax bill that will eventually come due here is going to cost. I will give you an assessment that I think that the current, they call them the Bush tax issues, will not be eliminated at the end of the year, and I also believe that those in the upper income bracket, including, by the way, lots of people that own small businesses and take the money in as an LLC or a sub-S and then have to put a lot of it back in the company, are not going to have a big increase in taxes for the present time. So with all of this going on, we then we get into the elections, and people began to talk in great energy about the question of unemployment, because it still remains high, although this morning we got a little better set of numbers. But here's a number for you. Until we get 3.5% economic growth, you're not really going to begin to create the number of jobs that we need to put people back to work. And we need 20 million jobs in the next 10 years. 8 or 9 million of them to put people that are out of work back to work, and 12 or so million for all the people that are going into the workforce, many of them your families. So we're going to work very, very hard on that. And I think the message that came on Tuesday is going to resonate at least for a couple of weeks in the Congress. Actually, I believe that it is going to help us that in the 2012 election, there are 2.5 the Democratic senators running for office for every Republican senator. And I said that the other day, and somebody wanted to know who the half people were. But the point is just the point. Folks realize what happened in this election, by the way. You know, we go from, it's like the military election, left, right, left, right. And what's happening is large numbers of our fellow citizens and many people here are the thinking sort of independents, and they when they didn't like Iraq and some of Bush issues, they moved over to Obama, and then when they didn't like that, they moved back, you know, to the other side. And the question is, where will they move in 2012? So now, for that record, let me just say that the chamber never gets involved in presidential politics. And people say, why not? Well, first of all, everybody want to run for president would be sitting in my lobby, and I don't need to see them. Second of all, You know, we deal with the administration. I'm leaving Monday to go to the G20 meetings in Korea and the APEC meetings in Japan, and we're, you know, we deal with all of that stuff all the time, so it's best that we just stay out of presidential politics. But if you can change the House and the Senate, if you can get the money to do that, we at least people listen to what we say. Our primary objective in this election, and I want you to listen to this a second, was to change the balance and shrink the numbers a little. I told you in the beginning they had a situation they could just drive right through the Congress and do what they wanted. So we figured add 5 or 6 or 7 seats in the Senate, and we aren't even thinking about taking the House back, but add 30 seats in the House, and all of a sudden it would be much, much harder to roll down the street. We don't really believe the country's well served when any one strong political force owns every vote in town, because you don't get the balance you do. History has shown us that our economy often prospers better under slightly divided government, although not as well under one person owns the whole place. So they're going to have another opportunity to restore economic well-being. We'll see how they do, and depending on how they do, we'll see what we do in the next election. You know, we've been doing a major study at the chamber looking at what we as an organization are going to have to do in the next couple of years, how we should restructure ourselves to deal with these complicated issues, what kind of people to hire. And we started it off with a major study which was summed up as a nation at risk. When you look at this nation and our business community, we are losing a lot of our competitive position to people that countries around the world where people may work harder, they may be hungrier, they may not have so many regulations, they may have more capital, whatever it is, we have got to be competitive. And the fundamental way to be competitive is to trade with them, to do business with them, and to get out in the middle of this, because we have the most innovative, smartest people in the world, and we need to do it. Now, I'm not a historian and I'm not a pundit, but I think this election is going to help us do much of that. It was about policies, not about players. I mean, you can't remember 10 names you heard unless it was your own congressman or what happened here in Florida. And by the way, you guys in Florida did a great job. You're all here early because, you know, you live down here, although you may live somewhere else. And we're glad you came here and voted, because your vote really counted. But, you know, it's an interesting thing when I say it's all about policies and our long-term prospects and deficits and all that, because some of the people that don't like business, when they lose, it's never about policy. It's about somebody spent too much money, somebody wasn't nice to them, somebody had some advantage. The bottom line, this election was about policies. It was about health care. It was about capital markets. It was about taxes. It was about labor policy. But most of all, it was about the fact that Americans thought there was far too much government. It was growing and growing. It's more than they wanted, more than they wanted to pay for, and sure as hell more than they could afford. So what we've done is to take a real careful look at this nation at risk and the disturbing happenings in this country, the loss of some of our famous optimism. But I don't play that game. See, I'm Irish, and I'm very, very optimistic. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but I'm seldom in doubt. And what I always look at, are our children and grandchildren. And by the way, I acknowledge that some of the children and grandchildren in this country are not doing as well as ours, that they haven't got equal education, and we've got to do something about that. But I think that there's a lot in America that we can build on. Now think about it, you know. Just think about your own family for a minute. And of course, we always, you know, there's always some kid doing something he shouldn't be doing. But that's they're preparing themselves for a real life in the business community. So now, you should know that about 60% of Americans think that the country's on the wrong track. That's the highest since we began polling that stuff in 1970s. And another 75% of Americans are angry or dissatisfied with what's happening in Washington. I am too, and that's why I travel so much. so that I get a sense of reality and I can bring it back to Washington from time to time. People are worried. They're scared. They want results in Washington. But then maybe when they talk to you about one thing, if you give them what they need, then they may not like it. I want you to think about if you all ended up running the Congress of the United States tomorrow. You know, everybody's telling you to cut spending. And when you do, they're going to be mad as hell because it's the spending that they're getting the benefit from. Everybody's telling you to cut, you know, don't cut taxes. And then at the same time, they're going to be angry because the deficits are growing. There's nothing simple about this issue. So what we're trying to do is to build on the positive things that this country can do if we narrow down the scope, seriously reduce the amount of regulation, which is, I'll say in a minute, a whole new form of government, and focus on those things we can do to put us back on the road. Now I want to say a word about the Tea Party. Everybody iced tea? Seriously, first of all, there is no Tea Party. There are seven Tea Parties. But they're very interesting because most of these groups that used to form up before were around social issues. Abortion, school prayer, all kinds of social issues, which are important issues. But these people have formed up around fundamental issues of deficit spending, taxes, and they are older people, older than young people like from the schools, more like us. They had an effect on this election, but not near as big an effect they're going to have in the future because they're going to make one fundamental change now that people look at them and say, hey, those guys really had an effect. And that is, they're going to get better candidates next time. They got a couple of good candidates this time, but, you know, who could ever win in Delaware with the candidate that they picked? But if they had another candidate, sure could have won. So I just think it's important to think about how that's going to work and what we've got to do. You know, we're going to have to deal eventually with deficits. I'm not worried about the short-term deficits. We got to put people back to work. The long-term deficits used to add up. Now they're multiplying up, and they're getting really, really serious, and maybe you'll hear some other comments about that. We're going to have to deal with entitlements, and nobody in this room wants us to deal with entitlements. But entitlements now, which is Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, military, all that, they're 61% of our federal budget, and nobody is allowed to do anything with it. It just keeps growing. And so in a very short time, it's going to be 71% of our expenditures. And if that happens, we're going to have to do something. And we're not going to like any of it. So we're going to have to find a way to do it. So let me just hit two other quick things before I wrap up. That's not mine ringing, no. You know, when it started this recession, the private sector lost 8 million jobs, and the government added 600,000 jobs, and they keep adding them. Everything you hear and everything you talk about going forward and what the government is doing and not doing, ask yourself a fundamental question. Is it going to create jobs in this country? If we can create legitimate private sector jobs, and it's more and more difficult, I'm going to tell you in a second, we can put people back to work, they will pay taxes, they will get off the public support, and we will have a much better equation and a much stronger economic circumstance to begin to tackle these long-term problems. On the tax side, as I said, I don't think anything's going to happen right now, but we got two deficit commissions running around. Everything you hear, think of this. Will it create jobs? Will it put people back to work? Will it put us in a position to deal with our long-term challenges? So, I want to say just a quick thing because we have the students here about education. If you look at the unemployed people right now, if you're a high school graduate, you have an unemployment rate of about 9%. If you're a college graduate, you have an unemployment rate of about 4.5% to 5.5%. If you are not a high school graduate, your unemployment rate can be as high as 30%. People understand this? And 30% of the kids in this country don't graduate from high school in 4 years. I really think it's something we've got to get focused on. And we're going to do a lot of that. And these are part of the issues that are letting us slide behind. And there's a lot we have to do. We have to fix the nation's infrastructure. Nobody wants us to fix the infrastructure, not in my backyard, not in my town, not on this planet. We've got to get back into the global trading business. And I hear everybody talk about China. Most of the people that talk about China don't know anything about China, except, how could you, unless you've been there and study it? I mean, it's very complicated. It's far away. They have a lot of people, 1.3 billion people. You know that 95% of the people we want to sell something to, any company in this country, indirectly or directly, live outside this country. So why would we have a trading system that the government was saying, well, the unions don't want us to trade, so we do trade agreements or to import things. Well, the unions haven't figured out how many jobs they create. If we ever exported a lot more, they'd have a different view. As a matter of fact, we've been talking to the Europeans. We're trying to get a global trade agreement. We're trying to talk to the Europeans, and we said, listen, let's shake up the whole global trading system. We can't do anything about agriculture, because nobody will come to any agreement on that. I mean, it's like farmers here in the United States. They own the whole country, and there's only about 10 of them. And financial services is complicated, but what we could do is we could just, on products trading, let's get rid of all of the tariffs tomorrow. Just all the tariffs go in there, all the tariffs come, just get rid of them, every single one of them. Now, that's easy to say, but I already heard from 15 industries that I don't really understand. But if we could do that, we would really, really push this country in the right direction. And then everybody would want to do a global trade agreement because they're afraid of being left out of the two largest trading partners in the world. Okay, so let's just talk about the future. The fundamental thing we have to do is combat or deal with the one thing that's got companies sitting on $1.8 or $9 trillion they're not spending, and has households sitting on money and not spending it, and have banks sitting on money and not lending it, and that's uncertainty, because they don't know all this stuff's going to cost. So what are we going to do about all of that? And that's what we have to do, and it's pretty fundamental. We've got to go deal with this regulatory deal. We have to figure out how to deal with healthcare and capital markets in a way that we fix it in a reasonable way without all these thousands of regulations. We have to deal with the question of energy and climate without shutting down the country. There are a lot of things we can do. Do you know that in the last 20 years, we have fundamentally changed the amount of energy we use to create a BTU of power, and we've cut it in half? The most efficient nation in the world doing that, and nobody stops to think about it. If we did that, why don't we do it again? And then we can save a whole lot of other stuff we don't have to do. But you can't walk around and say you ignore climate or you ignore the environment. You've got to deal with it, but let's deal with it in a way that puts people to work. I'm going to shorten this because I'd rather get to the questions if you don't mind, because I'm sick of listening to me. Let me go back to 1 minute to this infrastructure deal. The president, I think what the president's going to do is come out with a really good education program. I think he's going to loosen up on trade and sort of push back on the unions. But I think he's going to realize, even though he thinks there are no shovel-ready projects, Dwayne knows more about infrastructure than the president is ever going to know and all the people who work for him. Because that's his life. You know, he's in the transportation business and finance business. But the big issue here is, when you look at infrastructure, we're looking at the base, the table on which we run the whole global economy. We run our economy, and in this country, infrastructure is deteriorating quickly. I'm not talking about roads and bridges, although it's been 16 years since we had an increase in the federal fuel tax, and Dwayne doesn't want anybody to know this, but those great big trucks are getting twice the miles per gallon than they were 16 years ago, putting the same wear and tear on the road and paying half as much taxes. It's a great deal. But, and so are you, don't laugh. So the bottom line is, we need to take a look at what we're going to do about roads and bridges. What are we going to do about electricity generation? What are we going to do about refineries? What are we going to do about nuclear power? What are we going to do about broadband? because we're about to run out of that. If we had not had this recession, we would be really hurting. And by the way, we've done a huge study, and we have tied it together to show that GDP is grossly, directly, and significantly affected by what goes on in infrastructure. So look, let me just conclude. You know, you get a lot of people in the room, and you can start finding what's wrong with everything. You know, these people don't do this right, those people don't do that right, you know, you didn't cook the steak right, whatever it is. We've got to find what's right about things. This country is based on an economic system and a political system that's, with all of its warts, is the best in the world. The economic system is a free enterprise system that has put more people to work, taken more people out of poverty, given more people opportunity without regard to their education scores, without regard to where they grew up, on what side of the tracks. This is a country you can go out and make it if you want to work hard and have an idea, and you fail. You know, a lot of places you start something, you fail, you can't do it again. Here you fail. Most of the great entrepreneurs, they failed 3-4 times before they got anything going right. And you can do that in this country. And by the way, one of the problems with the new regulations, nobody's supposed to ever fail. The government's going to protect us from that. And that's a real problem. So not only that, but that this free enterprise economy lets us succeed beyond everybody's imagination. And then, unlike other countries, we, the people of this country, take the largesse that we have gotten, and we spend more money helping other people here and around the world than anybody you've ever heard of. So I think it's just a really good time. I believe the elections are over, so good for that. Now let's go to business. They find out who's going to be in charge of all these committees and get after them and try and go do something. Fix what's broken. Don't break what's fixed. And do the best we can. So my bottom line is very simple. Right here in this room are more thought leaders, more people of means, more people of connection, and of courage, and go do some of it. It's really important. It's so easy to point fingers at, well, these guys did it wrong, and those guys aren't so smart, and I never would have voted. So what are you going to do? That's the big question you have to ask every day. What's your contribution to make this work? A, if you voted, that's good. If you didn't vote, well, you better vote next time. And now figure out that we're going to, how do we stay in touch with the Congress? How do we press the state government? How do we encourage people? And how do we not be as much critical as we are encouraging? It's simple. You do a good job for the next 2 years and we get rid of you. I mean, it works. And if you do the good, and we'll thank you for your service as you go into retirement. And if you keep around and do a good job, then we're going to support you. That's the game. And I very much enjoyed coming down here. It's good to see some of my friends. And I'll be back a couple of times during the winter. I usually don't tell people when I'm coming. It's a good place to hide. But thank you very much. I really appreciate it. There you come on.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your being here. Appreciate your remarks. First, we have a couple of presents for you to take back on behalf
presents.
Of the form.
Yeah. All right.
Have two of them here. Here's a nice book on Naples, Florida, which our president has autographed for you. She's not the author, but as president, there you are.
Dwayne's wife keeps giving these so that Liz will buy a place here.
That's a good idea. Here's one on Marco Island because she might want to look there too.
Well, that'd be great.
But there you are for you
Thank
to take
you very
back
much.
With you. Okay.
Thank you. I'll put that right here.
Now we have more questions than we have time to answer, but one that I want to get to right away because we encourage our students to ask a question, and we have a student question. How did you get your start in politics? What would you recommend for people who wish to follow your example in the political field?
This works. That's right. Well, I'm not in politics. I represent the American business community, and I got my start by working. When I was 13, I figured it was better to have $6 than not to have $6. And so I had lots of jobs. And then the first job I had out of college, though, was an unbelievable job. I'll never forget it. I worked for the Boy Scouts of America, and I went to I went to their training school, 58 days with no jobs and nothing else to do, and I learned stuff I've been doing all my life. Worked a little bit in the university business and then started representing, after that I was Assistant Postmaster General of the United States. There are a bunch of them. And that was, how I ever got that job, I'm not sure, or I'm not telling. It was one of the great experiences of my life, and then I've been in the representation business ever since. If you believe in something, somebody's got to go out and help them get there. But the whole thing is get a good education, as much as you can learn, meet as many people as you can, have at least two jobs, because if you only have one job, when you're young and getting going, you don't get all the benefits of figuring out how to do a lot of things at once. And, all you got to do is believe in it and go do it. As far as politics, every candidate that's running for anything, particularly locally, would like to have young kids come help them with their campaigns because they don't have to pay them. So go at it.
Thank you, Tom. That's some good guidance. I probably have at least a dozen or more questions on taxes. I think Tom has pretty well covered that. It's everything from, will the taxes cuts expire, or will there be new taxes? Would you have any other, the estate tax? There's probably a card on every tax you want to think about.
Okay,
any additional comments?
Well, first of all, I think on the estate tax, it's time to get very careful because we only have 60 days to the end of the year. And between now and the end of the year, if you die, there are no estate taxes.
So watch your heirs, is that what you're trying to say?
So just beware. No, people always ask me, they say, Tom, are the tax increases going to be on companies or on people? I say yes. But we got a long time before we get there. We're going to put this thing off for a while. There are a lot of taxes in the health care bill. There are a lot of taxes being driven up in the states. The states look at their pension things. They're all broke, or most. But what we have to do is fight the free and easy increases in taxes. And if we have to increase any of them, we've got to put them where they don't cost jobs, where they don't drive the economy down. And we'll see when everybody gets in what that is. But you'll get at least, I think you'll get a year or more reprieve. But we're going to have to face up to this. And the big problem is they keep sneaking them in, everything else. 5% tax in the healthcare deal, some more over here. The states are doing it. But watch out for the next 60 days.
Okay. Would you please comment on there are two tax situations that may or may not help the economy. Number one is something could be done on investment tax credits, and number two, would the idea of repealing for a year or two the employee contribution to FICA, because that's spending money for the employee, might that help?
Well, the investment tax credit is critical. Most of the people that talk about increasing taxes talk about increasing the investment tax credit, upping that tax. And that's a big mistake because every study of when this ever been done, it just takes away from the economy. People don't make the same investments. People that have money didn't get it by being stupid. And if you really mess the tax system around, they just move the money around. And they, buy bonds, they do this. And you want to be very careful. It would be good to have people that look at this, have a little knowledge about it, get familiar with what happens, cause and effect, and so you want to be very careful about that. There was ITC, what was the other one?
FICA.
FICA, I think that's a dumb idea. Now, by the way, you notice I say what I think. And the reason is, while it would put money in spending, we have a huge problem in Social Security. All these years, we've been taking the Social Security money and spending it and saying to the American people, we owe you. Well, we owe it, trillions. Yeah. So what do you do when you take a whole year's collection and don't collect it? It just exacerbates that problem, puts some money back in the economy, but I think the bad's a lot worse than the good you get out of that.
What you're up against on that issue is so many people, the average citizen thinks there's a big fund there.
Oh, yeah.
In their name, that it's there for them take their Social Security benefits.
And by the way, people are passionate about Social Security. We had some people visiting not long ago, and these people, very successful, sort of born without much, but unbelievably wealthy.
Okay, I got time
go
for
ahead.
About maybe two more.
All right, go ahead.
First of all, we have questions on both sides of the issue. One question comes, what can be done to further reduce the value of the dollar in the international market so exports can increase? The other side of the issue is, aren't we doing too much and the value of the dollar has come down too far, and shouldn't the administration, the Congress, look at what we can do to start strengthening the dollar?
The value of the dollar ought to be determined by the markets. When you start messing around with the value of securities, you start a worldwide tit-for-tat arrangement where people are doing that all over the globe. And what it is going to do if we drive the value of the dollar down too much, start that war, and going to make it much, much more difficult for us to do our banking, to get investments, to attract people to trade with the United States. Bad idea.
Okay, one more quickie here and then a last one. We had Tom Honig here as a speaker last year, and of course he, as you well know, he's articulated, continues to support the view that continued easing is going to lay the seeds for future problems. How do you come out on that issue, may I ask?
Easing of monetary easing,
oh, okay. Fiscal easing,
all right,
easing,
good,
whatever.
Same thing.
Yes, yes.
I mean,
yes,
I think my deal is the best thing to do is let the markets determine the value. The markets will do good things for you if you build a strong economy, and it is not the value of a wrong value of the dollar manipulated by the government will start a war with other countries in the same thing. We will end up being losers because there's lots more of them than there is of us.
Two real quick ones. Number one, we have at least three or four people have asked, will Obama be reelected in 2012?
I think he's got a really good chance to be elected in 2012 if he moves a little bit to a more sensitive approach on dealing with business. But here's why he's going to get elected and has a good chance. You saw today economics going up a little bit. He's got 2 years or a year and a half to get the economy up. And if the economy is going up, remember they used to say it's the economy, stupid. It gives him a good chance.
Last question. Are you going to be a candidate for President of the United States in the 2012 election?
Last answer, hell no.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, buddy. Thank you.
I'll lead you out. Okay.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Nice job.
Thank you. I-